Hi everyone. Welcome to today's SNEB webinar hosted by the Communications Division. My name is Rachel Paul and I am the chairman of the division. Now I know on the GoToWebinar control panel it says that my name is Rachel Dager, but I'm doing the broadcast for today's webinar, so my name is Rachel Paul, so the Rachel Dager line is me. So just a few housekeeping notes as we get started. We are recording today's session, so look for an email from Rachel Dager on Monday with a link to the recording, the slides as a handout, and the CEU certificate you are earning for your attendance. We will take questions following the presentation, so please type those into the question box at the bottom of your GoToWebinar panel. When we close the session, there will be a short survey, and we appreciate your feedback on this session and ideas for future sessions. So our speakers for today, Dr. Sarah Colby is an associate professor in the Department of Nutrition at the University of Tennessee. She is an obesity prevention behavioral researcher with a focus on health communication through novel nutrition education strategies, including marketing, arts, and technology. In addition to her focus on novel communication strategies, she has research experience with young children, adolescents, and young adult populations. Community-based participatory action research, Latino and Native American populations, food security issues, and environmental and economic influences on food behavior. She is currently working on two USDA-funded research projects, the iCook project, in which 9 to 10-year-olds and their primary meal preparer learn to cook, eat, and play together, and the Fruit project, which we will hear more about today. Alice Henneman is responsible for Lancaster County Extension's food safety and nutrition programs aimed at the general public. She utilizes an omni-media programming strategy using multiple media formats and distribution channels to meet consumer information needs. In addition to direct consumer outreach, Alice makes her materials readily available for other educators and health professionals to use. Nationally, Alice is routinely asked to serve as a reviewer and to speak at conferences. Beth Snyder is the public relations coordinator at the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. With more than 9 years of experience in marketing communications, Beth is responsible for managing communications and social media strategy for the organization. Michelle O'Leary has also worked on this project, but could not be with us today. Michelle received her BS from Grove City College in elementary education and teaching. As the produce education coordinator at the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank, she promotes consumption of the groceries that are distributed daily to over 400 agencies throughout the 11 counties the food bank serves. So without further ado, we first have Dr. Sarah Colby presenting, and Sarah will take it away.
Thank you so much, and as hopefully it is working, wonderful. Great. Thank you for having me here today. Visual design is such a powerful tool in communication. The way images are created and laid out will help influence what people look at, what they read, what they think, how they feel about the information, and ultimately how effective that information may be in changing behavior. Now, there's an art and a science to designing images to most effectively influence an audience. Let's start here. What do you like about this image? Why? What does it make you feel? Are you interested in learning more? Notice the colors. What about the lines that are being created? The shapes, the balance, all of these factors and more are at play in your reaction to this image, whether it was good or bad. Although you could spend a lifetime becoming an expert in visual design, I would like to just very quickly go over some basic general information that you can think about as you develop and select images to use in your own nutrition education programs. There are a number of elements that are considered fundamental to creating visual design. And I encourage you, if you can, take some notes on each of these things. This will be a lot of talking on a very simple image here. But hopefully that way you can think about these as we go over the next slides and consider those elements as I show you some images that have been created for the project I will share with you today. So first of all, shapes. Shapes are basically self-contained areas that are created using lines or colors and textures. Even if you don't realize that you're creating a shape, you are. Sometimes if you can step back after you've created an image and just let your eyes blur or go soft, you can see the overall shape or shapes that you've created. And remember, a positive shape in any image automatically creates a negative shape. Lines fundamentally are the connection between two points, right? You can use them to define shapes, make divisions, add texture. When you're using straight lines, you need to consider things like length and width and the direction of the line. And again, you can let your eyes blur and look for the lines you've created unintentionally with your content. Make sure that line is appealing. Direction, as I mentioned, all lines have direction, so they could be horizontal, vertical, or oblique. Interestingly, theoretically, if you use a horizontal line, that can suggest kind of a state of calmness or a sense of stability, whereas a vertical line can give a feeling of formality or something that's alert, whereas an oblique line might suggest movement or action. So forms are three-dimensional objects that have volume and mass. You can intentionally or unintentionally create a form by combining two or more shapes. Forms can be defined, again, by the use of tones, textures, and colors. Size, whether it's larger or smaller, is really only defined by comparing the area occupied by one by something to something else. But we need to consider imagine something would feel if they were touching it. You can create texture using repeating an element that creates a pattern. You can use a texture to draw a person's attention away from something or toward a specific area. Font, we're very familiar with. We need to consider things like size, alignment, color, and spacing. And again, you need to consider visual accessibility as you consider font. The spacing and size of your text can create a visual hierarchy and determine what the viewer will look at first. It's why we use headers. Try to use as few fonts as possible. Maybe one or two fonts, maybe three, but you want to be as consistent as possible with the fonts. Too many fonts will just make it look cluttered and the viewer will not want to look at the image at all. And the last thing on here, sorry, I know this is a lot on one simple kind of boring slide, but we're getting the basics down so you can look at a lot of images in just a moment. So color is used to help differentiate between things. It can also create a sense of depth or draw attention to something. And it can be a really useful tool to help organize how a viewer is going to look at your information and follow that information. Now, because color is such a foundation of visual design, let's look at it a little bit more, because it also impacts the viewer psychologically. Temperature, when we're talking about temperature with color, in general, we have warm and cool colors. And you think red side of the color wheel as being warm, whereas the green side is on the cooler side, but it's all relative to each other, because a red could be warmer or cooler than another red. Remember, I mentioned that color helps us create a sense of how objects are positioned. Interesting, warmer colors help an object appear closer to the viewer, whereas cooler colors create the sense that those objects are farther away. Tone can also be called value. That's basically how light or dark a color is. Neutrals, you're probably familiar with, black, white, gray, tan, brown. Palettes, basically, fundamentally is a range of colors, but often we think of it as a group of colors that kind of go together or complement each other. Codes is another interesting area that can save you time long term if you spend a little bit of time getting to know them, because experts talk about exact colors using what are called hex codes, and they're a series of characters, basically. Knowing the hex codes you use for one thing will allow you to use that exact same color really easily again someplace else. If you learn to look at those hex codes, you actually can save yourself a lot of time during the design process. So for overall, for colors, you usually want to use only a few colors to make it easier for the viewer to look where you want them to look and in what order. Think of it, you're creating a visual path. If you pick a dominant color and use it only in key areas where they have the most important information, that will help the viewer look there. There are a lot of elements here to consider listed. Don't worry, we don't have time to go into each of these, but they're all really important. So I'll just say something very simply about each of them and move on. Unity, that's the elements that working together to express what you're trying to say. Space, this is overall how those elements are laid out compared to each other. Really important to say white space is so important, and often we underutilize that white space tool. hierarchy can be established using different size fonts, different textures, lines. It lets the reader quickly look over like your headings and navigate an image. Balance. This is a kind of hard and vital concept. A well-balanced layout would let that viewer focus on the primary content. Sometimes you can use modular grids to let certain elements pop while keeping the overall organization intact. This is where white space can play a major role again. Let the white space control the visual flow. It can be used to separate elements. And remember that balance is equal distribution, but it's not necessarily symmetry. It doesn't have to be matchy-match. Oops, sorry, it's a surprise. That's the next. You'll see it in a minute. Gradation. Now you're wondering, right? It will make sense in just a moment, don't worry. So gradation is the color may be changed in gradation from warm to cool or in tone from dark to light. This can add interest and a sense of movement to a shape. If you include gradation that goes from dark to light, it actually can help the viewer's eye move along that shape. Repetition. It's best to use some variation if you're going to use a lot of repetition of patterns. Otherwise, that image can become kind of monotone. Sometimes that variation can just be a very small change, maybe in gradation or color or texture. Contrast. This is basically opposition. This can be in size, color, or direction. Too much contrast can make an image difficult to look at or too chaotic or confusing. But if you use it carefully, it can really increase the visual interest and make something stand out. Scale, basically the range of sizes, and it's important to use to create a sense of depth. Dominance is when there's one element as the focal point. And you can create a sense of dominance, again, through size or color or position or by using a specific shape. Concordance is really that overall harmony in terms of shapes, colors, or other elements, basically how they all seem to go together. But here's the hint for the next slide. The challenge with creating images that best reach certain audiences is that art is in the eye of the beholder, right? What's beautiful or interesting or cool today might not be the same tomorrow. Okay, so as you know, I can give you a great example of this. Here is a wonderful picture of prom dresses from the 1980s. It's also a good point to make that when I was looking for these, you have to be very careful when you're using images that they're either images you've created, you've taken the photos yourself, you have permission to use. If you're using things offline, and I think some of our other speakers will go into this a little bit more, just making sure that copyright, that you've either paid for that photo or you really understand the copyright permissions. Here I have permission to use this photo. Won't say why. The faces have been blurred out to protect the innocent. So these were cool then, I think, but would they still be today? I don't think so. But how do you know what is cool today and to what groups? I think this is an excellent example for another reason that using a community-based participatory approach is so valuable. The project I will talk to you today about was CBPR. And the community, in this first phase, the community were college students, and they were equal partners with researchers in every aspect of this project. In fact, all of the images that you will see from here on out were created by those college students. So ideally, how do you make sure the images created to communicate health to a population will speak to that population? You have them created by the population. So what is this project that I keep alluding to? It is the Get Fruit Project. This is a USDA-funded childhood obesity prevention project. Older adolescents with a focus on diet, physical activity, and stress management. And although those are the three main areas of the project, it really incorporates all elements of life that impact how well the older adolescents are. In the Get Fruit Project, students assessed their own environments, explored health behavior, set priorities for change, and then developed a year-long intervention strategy for college campuses to help incoming first-year students be as healthy as possible and prevent unwanted weight gain. These college students will then work with high school students to help the high school students do the same thing on high school campuses. Again, notice the graphics as I go. These were all images that were created by the students. For this presentation today, I went on one social media site and I pulled some images that the students had created. And it was wonderful that I could use those images to give you an overview of some of the things that we've done in this project. This is a huge project with over 40 PhD researchers collaborating and over 1,000 students working on this project in some capacity. We have 4 intervention sites. with Ann Matthews, the PI at University of Florida, Kendra Cattleman at SDSU, Melissa Olfert at WVU, I'm at UT, Adrian White in Maine, Tanya Horacek in Syracuse, Onikia Brown at Auburn, and Tonda Kidd at Kansas State. We have many different elements of this project, including upperclassmen being matched with incoming freshmen to help the freshmen be as healthy and successful as possible in their first year at college. And so here you see, again, this is something I pulled straight off of a social media site. It was created by students for students. Notice some of the elements that I talked about previously, between line, using white space to separate where your eye is drawn. All of those things are things to consider as you see these next images. Not only do we have peer mentors, but we also have had students at our four intervention schools, UT, West Virginia, South Dakota, and University of Florida, working together to assess their environments and develop the intervention. But we've also had student researchers at all of our schools who gain so many valuable research and health promotion skills through this collaboration. The students themselves designed the website where people can go to get more information about the project. And I think it's important for us to think about the layout and the choices that they make. Again, this is a website that may be more attractive and resonate more with students because of the fact that visually it was created by students. They know what they're interested in. They know what looks best to them. We also created an automatic health survey that students can take that give them a wellness report card that lets them compare their fruit and vegetable intake, physical activity, sleep, stress levels to recommendations, and their school averages. We have assessed well over 3,000 students on a wide range, a variety of health-related behaviors, and we're following those students over their years at college. There are many elements of this project, so I'm only able to share a few of them here today. All of these elements have been created by the students. And this includes, for instance, using social media to highlight people on campus who are dedicated to promoting health. The students have also created student organizations that act as umbrella organizations to communicate between different health-related student organizations on campus and market the health-related events that are occurring on campus. They've also had town hall meetings where they bring together students to talk about factors that impact health on campus. They've had a number of these meetings on all of the different campuses and make determinations for advocacy for those environmental changes. They have intervened in the food environment to increase availability of healthy options. Here's an example where they painted our rock a number of times at UT, promoting healthy lifestyles. They've held many physical activity and nutrition education programming on campus. They've also developed programming, especially in areas where they were identified gaps that the students were able to voice where they like to see events or programming offered and create those novel approaches for their campus. More examples of great activity and students working together to develop different programs. They've held health education fun events as well as creating online blogs to discuss health topics. They've made and sent out health promotion marketing materials throughout multiple social media sites, and this was really done throughout the week, throughout the entire intervention, throughout a year-long process. A reminder, all of these events, programs, materials that you see that were created for the students by the students, they were all around three topic areas of diet, physical activity, and stress management. Here's some more stress management. They're adorable. And more stress management. And actually, the three areas were actually balanced and focused in terms of the amount of social marketing that occurred per area. I just randomly pulled a few images that called to me at the time. So sorry, so many of those were stress-oriented. Many of the visuals that were created actually combined different elements of that diet, physical activity, and stress management. And again, the art and the photos were created by the students. We had a lot of very positive messages that were incorporated. They were also timed. The messages were timed with campus events. So you can see here, this is about studying during the finals time. And they also had messages that were specific for the end of the school year and that promoted maintaining healthy lifestyles. So in the future, visualizing future, yes. We will have a toolkit available for other schools to use. We also have mini grants available for $3,000 available to faculty and student groups that want to do this on their campus next year. The toolkits and the online repository of the health promotion marketing materials will then be made available to the public through the Vroove.com website. Here are some references and resources I'll be happy to share with you. And I hope that by seeing a sample of the visual images that were created by the students for this project, you're able to see some of the elements of great design that can be used to create images designed to help change behavior. I look forward to taking your questions at the end of today's presentation.
Hi, I'm excited to be with you today. If you have questions about some of the things I'm talking about afterwards, please do feel free to email me at ahenneman1@unl.edu. I'll be showing you a lot of resources that you can use in putting together images for your nutrition education programs. And don't worry about taking notes, because Rachel has put together a handout of all the slides that we're showing, so you can look back to this and refer and know where to find the resources. And starting with kind of a pun, if you will, I think that visuals are so important in our nutrition education activities, because they really are what does make us visible to the public. Okay, my project overview. I use photos in about everything in recipes and other food-related projects to promote healthy eating. At my target audience of consumers and multiplier groups that work with consumers, such as media, nutrition educators, and other health professionals. And my frequent tagline, and you'll see this illustrated in many of the photos I show you, is making you hungry for healthy food. And it's a lot easier to do that with images than just words. The images are used any place I can think of putting one, whether it's in a recipe for a for handouts, presentations, websites, blogs, and so on. And the following examples, I think, will illustrate you the power of images to capture interest. Example, which Facebook post would you be most likely to read and to share? Which blog post gets your attention? Make sure that when you have that big, beautiful picture there, that you also have it at the top, so people immediately are drawn into the rest of what you have. And if they've subscribed to your blog, they also will see that coming up from the very beginning. Which web page looks the most interesting? The second one certainly did take a bit more time to develop to promote our different blogs and newsletters. However, it was much more effective in telling people what we were about. And really, isn't that what we want to do, is to make a difference and get people to use our materials? I think unless we go that extra step and use images, often it may not be worth it even in putting up the links at all. Okay, which recipe is most enticing? Most people tell me that when they first look at a recipe, they look at the picture, and that's how they learn what the recipe's about. So that picture may be the first step in helping draw into reading more about it. Now, does this photo make you feel hungry for healthy food? I use photos like this in PowerPoint slides and presentations for the general public. I'm unable to do cooking presentations or demonstrations for groups on any large basis because of all the time and equipment and money involved. So what I do is I prepare a lot of the foods in advance, any steps that may go into that, and I put them together into a PowerPoint slide that people can view and learn about in the process of this. Also, in working toward a lot of different income groups and age groups, many of times of whom they're all together in that same audience, what I find, too, is that having these images helps explain what I'm talking about. Words may not mean the same to everyone, especially if someone is lower literacy or English is their second language, but that picture helps give meaning to what you're saying. Also, when I do choose foods that I show, I choose ones that are very commonly available to people, that are inexpensive. I use recipes that are very quick and easy to make. These are things that will make it more likely that people will repeat these recipes and use them on a regular basis, which is going to make more difference than if it's just a special type of food they have once in a while. Okay, which tweet catches your eye. Now, we found that when we measured visits to their food website via social media, that we had an increase in visits after we started using more images and more vivid ones in our social media posts. Now, some supporting research on this. The colored visuals tend to increase our willingness to read content. People remember more of what we've shown them if it's paired with an image. Marketers feel photography is a very important marketing strategy. 65% of senior marketing execs believe visuals are core to communicating their brand. The visual social media is 40 times more likely to get shared on social media. Okay, recommendations. So how are we going to get all of these photos? I'd like to tell you, give you some very general guidelines on taking photos and editing photos, also some sources of free photos. And these are all very inexpensive. The most expensive one costs $2.99. The most sophisticated piece of equipment is a pair of tweezers. Okay, what I'm going to talk about mainly are some tips on taking food photos with a smart camera. If you're using students to help them project, almost every student has a smartphone with them all the time. Also, you could use a basic point-and-shoot camera, but as you'll see, there are a lot of more options available with your smartphone. Now, a couple of tips about taking photos. If you can take a photo in natural light, this is better. It gives a nice, soft patina to your photo. If this picture was taken in front of a window, if there had been a really bright sunlight coming through, I would have put it like a dish towel or something over the curtain rod to just give it more of a shaded effect. Or likewise, outside, I would have looked for some shade if I were trying to take this outside. It was too bright and sunny. Try a close-up. Does this help you see what's in there? Also making you hungry and want to take a bite out of that. Use odd numbers, like three of a subject versus two or four. Spoon out a portion. Garnish with herbs or cheese. Especially like cheese, because not only does it add a nice touch of color to many foods that may be more of brown tones, but also most people really like cheese and it draws them into trying the recipe. And it's something they most likely have on hand. Take lots of photos and different angles. When photographers for National Geographic used to take rolls of film to a project, they often would use up to 1,000 rolls of film for just a single assignment. With your digital camera, you are absolutely unlimited by the number of photos that you can take. If you're out on an assignment and taking a lot of pictures, you may want to take an extra battery pack with you to keep your camera fueled during your photo session. But check with your friends, colleagues, family, which ones do they like the best? And hang on to several of the ones that you think are good, because you may use them in different ways in the future. Another tip is framing. Can you shoot through something to kind of highlight the main parts? This is a main part of a hoop house. The rule of thirds, put some of the major elements along the grid lines. Like if you have a picture of a skyline, have the horizon at either the top or the bottom third. Don't have it right in the middle. Also, really, points of interest, have them at the intersections, like where the lady here and Mrs. pointing to something in her garden. Also, if you do have somebody facing or pointing or moving, make sure they're moving into the picture rather than running out of it, unless that should be some very special creative element you're trying to introduce. Cropping is very powerful and very easy to do. You can do this on all the apps I'm going to tell you about on your smartphone. Just getting rid of that extra part of cattle and that gray sky helps a lot. And, you know, often we're taking photos on the fly. We really do not have the time to frame it all that well. Plus, cows move, so you probably will never get them to quite stand still the way they look in the crop picture. Also, there are different of the tools I'm talking about. They may have templates that you can use to crop foods. This was a picture of a farmer's market. Take, and I just use the cropping tool from PicMonkey to shape this. I'll talk more about that later. Find interesting backgrounds. I tend to use vinyl or plastic type placemats for backgrounds. One thing, if I spill food, it's so easy to wipe it off them. Some people will use dish towels. Some will use different colors of napkins. I think it may be advisable to keep it rather simple, so it looks like it's within a person's own home that they may be serving this. Also, I use plainer dishes, so the focus is on the food, not on the food, the dish that is served from. You know, do you want a top view or a portion of it? You know, you decide. Take both. You may use both of them later on in different contexts. If you are taking a portion of it or you're taking a view at an angle, try to use an angle so the food will look like it would look if the person were sitting at the table ready to eat it. Put soup in a shallow bowl so everything doesn't sink to the bottom. I don't try to use fancy tricks to make my food better than it really looks. But I really do. This is probably the only trick that I use at all, and it's just simply so that all those carrots and peppers and that don't sink to the bottom. Another tool that I use a lot is a tweezers. When I'm pouring this food into a bowl or putting it on a plate, often the same time, maybe those carrots all end up in one place, and the tweezers is a good way to move them around. Also, if you're putting food on a plate or a bowl, that have that plate in place and then put the food on it. Don't try to fill it up and then carry it somewhere. Your food will slosh all over the sides. Photo editing. These are available on your phone. There are free versions. The one I use a lot of is Camera Plus. This is only iTunes only. I like to get the pro version that sells for $2.99. And what I really like on it, and I think is most powerful, is the type of clarity app that they have on it. Because you can see the two pictures, the before and after in that lower right-hand corner. Just how much difference can be made with just that one app. Another one is Snapseed. That also allows you to make different changes to a photo. It's available on iTunes and Google Play. Okay, Camera Plus. Here's just the basics of where we've taken the same picture. We've done a little bit of cropping. We've saturated more, brightened it more, sharpened it. You can see just the difference. And this was all done on my phone. These are also some other options that are in Camera Plus. Plus, there are a lot of ones beyond this. For example, there are a lot of different types of filters. So if you want some kind of a very special effect, you can put a very unusual filter effect on it. That clarity, there's something called a lab where you can do things like straighten things. You can tint it. You can softer focus it. Plus, there's a lot of different types of frames you can put on pictures. Another one is Snapseed. Here again, you see I have a second photo. I've simply made it a little bit clearer, a little bit brighter, and I've cropped it to introduce just the main elements. Now, when I first got started in working with photos, our media person said I was just oversaturating. They were just almost garish. And what I discovered is that I had cataracts, and everything I was looking at was kind of this brown, muddy color. So if you think you need to really pump up the color, but everybody else is saying, you know, tone it down, maybe it's time to get your eyes checked. Okay, this is some of the Snapseed options. Here's in the middle, I've got example of a vignette. I use this sometimes if I just want to focus on a certain part or if the outer edges aren't very attractive. You want to be careful when you're cropping to not crop down too far so that your picture is a very low resolution by the time you use it in the size you want. Also, all of these apps have ways that you can put text on them, sometimes just a plain text, sometimes within a little box or circle. One of the things I use a lot for photo editing is PicMonkey. That's that one that had that heart template. Here again is one where I just did the basic cropping, so you see you can get the basics on all of these. Also, here are some of the other options, and these are all right from my phone, and they're adding new ones all the time, but you can have all these basic edits of cropping, adjusting. What I kind of find fun are the stickers, and right now they have a lot of holiday ones out, how I added a sun to the middle picture. Plus, you can change the tone. The last one is more of a sepia type of tone. If you're looking for custom designing images for different types of social media, Canva makes it so easy. You can do this on your iPhone, or iPad, Google Play. And with this, you can get the perfect size to put up on any of these types of social media. Just upload your picture, you slide it over that template, and it automatically removes the edges that don't fit within that template. And you keep moving around till you get what you want, plus add some text. These are just some of the many options, again, that you have with Canva. Now, with the photos, you may not have time or resources always to take your own photos or a student help to do this or other volunteer help. This is a little bit about some free sources and just a few comments on this. Just because it doesn't have a copyright doesn't mean it's copyright free. It's copyright the minute to create it. You can't infringe on the creator's intent. Saying it's for educational use may not be sufficient to protect you. I've heard of in one school where somebody was fined $2,000 for using a film that was not available for that type of use. And even government sites provide guidelines for photos. For example, you shouldn't be changing how Choose My Plate icon looks. Okay, I put together a source also where you can find free photos, bit.ly/free-photos-websites. I give the links to the websites. I give examples of where they're of how you might give a citation, and there are thousands there. Enjoy them and make your work easier this weekend or next week in adding images to your nutrition educational materials. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. So first, of course, we were introduced at the beginning of the webinar. But again, my name is Beth Snyder. I'm the Public Relations Coordinator at Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. I play an instrumental role in branding the food bank and managing the organization's marketing efforts. Michelle O'Leary is also a member of our communications team. I'm sorry, I don't know why that's advancing without me. Bear with me one second here while I turn that off. Well, it's not working. Okay. So Michelle has played an instrumental role in updating our recipe cards. Since she came on about 2 years ago, she was working on cooking demonstrations throughout our network, showing families how to prepare these healthy meals. So these are some examples of the work that Michelle has been doing. I apologize. The image that you're seeing on your left-hand side of your screen, the Carrots Made Easy, is the original way our photos were being shown and how our recipe cards were being used. Michelle has since updated the recipe cards to what you're now seeing on the right, which is much more visually appealing to the families that we serve and still gets across the message of how to prepare the recipe. So these, the recipe cards and the tip cards that we now produce are distributed throughout our network of nearly 400 member agencies, including food pantries, soup kitchens, shelters, after-school programs, and senior housing sites. So as the food bank continues to focus on distributing more fresh produce and arming the families we serve with new and interesting ways to use this produce, these recipe and tip cards are vital. Each recipe card emphasizes the importance of incorporating fresh produce alongside the shelf-stable items that we distribute, and our goal is not only to illustrate the cooking steps to our families, but also to draw them into the kitchen together with photos of attractive yet healthy meals that they may or may not have tried before. Since we've recently updated a lot of the design that we've been using with our materials, we went out and surveyed the families that we serve to find out exactly how effective are these cards. 78% of people surveyed found that the cards were easy and straightforward. 81% said that they found the photos very helpful. 79% of people said the recipes were new to them, and 92% of people look forward to receiving more recipes in the future. So with new and inventive recipes using familiar ingredients, we can encourage the individuals and families we serve to try new healthy meals for their own families at home. So these are just a couple of pulled out quotes that we had received back from the families that we serve. You know, the print size on the card was easy to read. You know, in Pittsburgh, we face an aging population, so, you know, making sure that those are bold and big and bright is really helpful. Of course, colorful. My children like to use to look at them, and I use the one to show me how to cut things. And I like to see them on the center info board when waiting for food assistance. So this person must be receiving them through a pantry. When they go home, I get my cards out, and the pictures really make me look at them, which is our goal, to make sure that families are utilizing these recipes in new ways. Some recommendations that we would have for folks looking to do this sort of thing would be to know your audience, number one. Most importantly, understanding the various populations that you're targeting and creating relatable recipes that often just offer a new twist. So, for instance, the best ever home fries that are on this page. Home fries are something that is very familiar for the families that we serve, but what we're doing is we're adding two new ingredients to it so that they're encouraged to try those. I would say, if your audience is used to either passing food around a dinner table or maybe scooping it directly out of the pots on the stove, I would steer away from doing like fancy plating when you're showing your recipes and things of that sort. That can be a turnoff for the families that we serve particularly. Incorporate a lot of color if you can on your pages. Color, as we know, will draw people in and make them want to look at the images and engage with the content that you're providing. Some other additional recommendations that we would have would be to show the steps authentically. So I know there can be a difficulty with photographing food sometimes when you're trying to illustrate a step. But as you can see on these ones, you can show them either partially way through the step or what it should look like when they're doing the step. Consider if you are printing these recipes ultimately in black and white. A tomato, for instance, or some salsa might not look like salsa if it's printed in black and white instead of color. So that would be something to take into consideration. And illustrate realistic situations in your photograph. Don't worry if you're using bruised fruits and vegetables. They can still be used in the recipe. I would also say that I would be careful about using Google or other free sites to find images unless you're checking into what exactly the copyright laws or regulations on those sites are, simply because you could end up in a situation where you're being contacted legally to remove those images from your publications. Any other questions, I'm more than happy to answer. And we are always more than welcome to share some of our content as well.
Okay, great. So I am just going to put up my slides. There we go. Great. So at this point, thank you so much to all of our presenters. That was really a lot of wonderful information. At this point, we will take questions. So if you want to type your questions into the question box, I will field them to our different presenters. So the first question is to Sarah Colby. How and when will information about the small grants be available?
Great. Thank you for asking that. We are putting out a request for proposals to be submitted starting January. We'll send those out through, of course, SNEES and other listservs and try to get that out nationwide. So look for them in January. They'll be due March 1st.
Wonderful. Any other?
I'd just like to add, they're very, very, very simple application process. So please look for those.
Great. Sounds wonderful. If there are any other questions, please put them in the question box. I have a question for all of our presenters. Do you ever have any requests for translating your materials into other languages, and how do you go about doing that? Does that put does that change anything in terms of the images? If anyone wants to respond.
So this is Beth at Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. We have, in Pittsburgh, we're having a population of refugees and things that we're seeing increasing in our area. So those folks might not necessarily speak English, which is, it is a challenge. For the most part, through the photographs, I don't see us needing to change the way the photographs look. However, the language will need to be adjusted slightly to effectively communicate to those populations.
And this is Sarah Colby. One thing that I would say is I recommend having a native speaker do the translation.
This is Alice. We've not done a lot of a translation ourselves, but other people have translated them, and that is one of the reasons that we keep our images just very, very simple. So basically the focus is on the food, not on a lot of things that may be specific to one type of culture.
And one last thing on that, if you can – oh, my phone has been lost. Okay. Can you hear me? Sorry, my audio was cut off.
Yes, we can hear you now.
Great, thank you. So I was just saying, not only having a native speaker who translates those, but then you need another person who translates it back into English. So that way you can verify as it comes back that it's what you originally intended. So that back translation is an important component. Challenging, but important.
Great, thank you. We have another question come in. Do you allow other organizations to use your materials and images? And if so, what requirements do you give them regarding what they can do with the images and materials? Do you allow them to edit these images, add their logo, et cetera? So that can be for all presenters.
This is Beth at Greater Pittsburgh again. We have started to share our recipe cards throughout our network, so other member, we're part of Feeding America. So there's food banks like ours across the United States, and we allow other member agencies to request those materials from us, our recipe cards. So essentially what we have them do is we have them send us their logos, and we go ahead and add their logo to the recipe card and then send them the completed PDF so that they can print those as they see fit. So we do not share, like, as of right now, we're not sharing the original photos and the editable design, but we're more than happy to work with those agencies to add their branding to it and share those back with them.
This is Alice. For photos that I take myself, I upload a lot of those to Flickr with a Creative Commons attribution so that other people can download them and use them. And Creative Commons does have a recommended way to source those. And I do give that also in the resource I gave at the end of my presentation. But I pretty much let people use them as they want, as long as they, again, follow Creative Commons guidelines of not misrepresenting it or using it to sell their product or anything, because I find it really helps get out nutrition information messages. For example, I've taken a lot of pictures at farmers markets, and those especially have been used by a lot of other people in helping promote fruit and vegetable consumption.
And this is Sarah. We, as I mentioned at fruit.com, by the end of spring, we'll have that repository set up more effectively, and we do share all of our images. They also can be edited and used as needed for local sites. So we do have photography and the original artwork and memes and so forth all available for health promotion.
Great, wonderful. And just because we have a few minutes left, I have another question. I think this was mentioned, but if we can reiterate. So do you know where to go to look at different types of laws about how and which types of photos to use and copyright information. Is there some repository of information about how to use different images?
This is Alice. I gave a link in one of my slides to a governmental copyright office. The thing that makes it a little bit difficult is it's kind of an individual situation on each type of image as far as how it's used, how much of it is used, whether it detracts from the sale of something the other person is doing, whether they themselves have done something to formally document their copyright so that others should not be using that at all. So I think when in doubt, make sure to ask permission, or most of the websites that have photos available do have guidelines on how to use them. You'll find examples again on that article that I put together that I shared in my my last slide of how it gives suggested attribution and so on, which I think will help protect you because you're following exactly their guidelines.
Yeah, this is Beth Snyder. Even so some of the paid sites that you'll use to even get images, you have to read in the details what you're allowed to use those images for. Some of them will say you're not allowed to use them if you intend on making money off of those. So if we want to use an image for a fundraising event and it states that, we won't use that image just to be safe. So you really just have to read in each image or on each site what the rules are for that particular site or image. And if you're really not sure, I would just suggest reaching out to the site administrator.
Great. Thank you both very much. And thank you to all of our presenters. This was really very educational and a wonderful presentation. So in closing, just a reminder to watch for an email from SNEB on Monday with a link to the recording, the slide handout, and your CEU certificate. This is the final SNEB webinar for 2016. Watch the website for details for next year's calendar. The Spring Journal Club will start Monday, February 6th. With 11 sessions looking at policies, systems, and environmental change initiatives and programs to improve health. So thank you, everyone, and have a great rest of your Friday.